Turpentine is excited to announce our new show, The AI Daily Brief, hosted by Nathaniel Whittemore. The AI Daily Brief is a daily show that covers all things AI, from legislation to new technologies in the market, to the philosophical and ethical debates around generalized intelligence. If you're looking for an edge to stay up to date on everything AI, subscribe to the AI Daily Brief at the link in the description. On this week's episode of Upstream, I'm joined by Alex Blania, co-founder and CEO of Tools for Humanity, the organization behind WorldCoin. We do a deep dive on WorldCoin, including proof of personhood, privacy, and the role of cryptocurrency in a world with AGI. Please enjoy the episode.
Alex, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining.
Thanks for having me.
So for those of you, for those of the audience who are unfamiliar, can you explain what WorldCoin is and how you came to start it? And I understand it's taken quite the evolution since the initial idea. So why don't you unpack your journey a little bit?
I will. I actually start at the beginning of the journey, then we'll get to what it actually is, because I think it kind of helps to set the stage. Kind of going 4 years back, I was actually in AI, and I was working on how to use very large models to predict quantum systems at Caltech in Los Angeles. And I suddenly, to kind of make it short, I was in AI and kind of how to use deep learning to predict quantum systems, which is like a really hard thing to do, and we really need it for quantum computing and other things. And then I actually met Samo, who was actually a big part of that story, and somewhat because I met Samo and some other coincidences, I got introduced to Max and Sam. And Max and Sam were already working on WorldCoin back then. So Sam Altman, who you certainly know from OpenAI, and Max Lowenstern. And there was like a conceptual paper of WorldCoin, what WorldCoin should be. And the two main ideas were, well, for one, AGI is going to come, and it will change everything. It will impact society in a very, very meaningful way. And we will need to build tools to kind of actually make that a good transition, an exciting transition that is kind of good for all of humanity. And we'll talk much more about what we think these are. And then the second piece is that actually crypto itself, kind of the whole idea is very important. And I think no one can disagree with that idea of economically empowering everyone. But it's now around since a long time, and somehow it didn't have that breakthrough moment. It somehow did never get to a billion people. So what can we do to get there? And the idea was very simple. That's the one thing about Sam, like the ideas are always very simple. It's just very hard to get to them, right? Building AGI, and it's like, it's clearly good, and it's a very simple idea, just building it is really hard. And WorldCoin was somewhat similar. And the idea was, well, what would happen if we would relaunch something like Bitcoin and we would give ownership in it to literally every human being just for being a human being? And that would be billions of dollars of incentive alignment around just like creating a really, really large network. And maybe that's all you need. Maybe you just need a really, really large network to kickstart network effects and make crypto suddenly much more useful, to somewhat be the Tesla of crypto. And on the other hand, to do that, however, you need to solve another important primitive, which is proof of personhood. So how can you verify your humanity to the internet? And that matters in the crypto sphere because you need it to get to incentive alignment, because if you don't have that, bots and malicious actors just like claim everything, and something like WorldCoin would break down immediately. And it matters for the normal world because, well, AI is here. And as we know from X or Twitter, is that, well, bots create a lot of experiences, and we will certainly need kind of a human gate for the internet for many applications. For other applications, it's super cool to interact with AI, but we don't have that. And it's very, for a lot of reasons, it's dangerous to rely on KYC only, and it's also not a global solution. So we took all of those things together, all of those ideas together, and kind of spent a year doing research and built prototypes for pretty much everything you could imagine, and kind of within that sphere of ideas. And we realized a couple of important things. We realized that proof of personhood itself is actually a much harder problem than it maybe sounds initially. And that kind of those two things together. So like if you actually launch a digital currency and it has billions of dollars of value and you use that to bootstrap a network, that it actually is probably much more profound than we initially thought, because just PayPal launched with distributing $70 million, I think, like in these like $20 referrals. And like, okay, if you scale that to $20 billion, it would be pretty incredible. And so this was like a rant, but maybe you jump in first before I go much deeper into anything.
No. Please go in the overview. I want to hear about, more about, you know, so you talked about where it started, but I want to hear more on the implementation. What was the evolution in terms of like, hey, what's the exact product here that should be offered?
Yeah. So, okay. So there was the initial set of ideas and we're like, okay, it all goes down to first we need to solve this proof of personhood problem, because otherwise none of it really makes sense. And within proof of personhood, you can essentially think about three potential ideas to solve the problem. One is KYC. So you rely on government infrastructure, essentially. Second is what people call web of trust. So you build out kind of a trust graph of digital signatures and kind of digital properties and behaviors and things like that. And the third one is biometrics, of course. Right? So you actually measure what it means to be a person. And we threw away the KYC situation almost immediately, right? Because that kind of, for one, it goes a little bit against the against the fundamental idea of crypto, that you want to build infrastructure that is resilient against even governments colluding. And on the other hand, it's just within proof of personhood, what is very important to understand is the weakest link in the chain can make everything break, right? And so you just need one or two governments to don't have a reliable infrastructure and everything will break, because they can just insert a lot of fake identities and kind of everything breaks down. So threw that away. Second was web of trust. And we kind of talked to early teams at Facebook that did these kinds of things and tried to build that out in kind of a Facebook manner. So you have friends and you have people that send messages. So they have a lot of information, but even they were not able to crack that problem, because everything that is purely digital is just you're somewhat able to engineer that. And especially with AI, my simple rule for AI is like everything that is purely digital will break, or will be very easy to fake. It's going to be somewhat easy to just send out a lot of agents and emulate human behavior on the internet. That's not going to be a challenge anymore. And so we threw it away too. And then within biometrics, the first thing that is important to understand is the problem that we have to solve to build such a human gate for the internet is a very different problem than what your iPhone is solving for. Because what your iPhone is solving for is, okay, this is Alex logging again into the iPhone. So it's a one-to-one matching. So there's an embedding stored locally on the phone of who I am, who I look like. So a 3D point cloud and a picture that is compressed, and I try to log in again. A new embedding is created, matched to this one previous one, and if that works, I can use my phone. But to solve proof of personhood, we need to compare one person against everyone else, because we want to make sure that you only have one account. And that is something that currently only the government really does. And all the other startups, they build on top of that somewhat. And so it goes from one to one to one to N. And you can just kind of draw a line of entropy, so how much information you can generate with different sources of information. So it could be face, could be fingerprint, things like that. And if you want to get to a billion people, most of those things actually break. So face or fingerprint, things like that, just don't have enough information to be able to scale to so many people. Just like the error rate explodes exponentially. So you don't have a constant error rate, but you literally hit a wall and your whole system breaks down. And of course, DNA would work, but I think that would freak out people quite a bit. And somewhere in the sweet spot, and the only thing that really we learned can work is the human eye. It has a lot of entropy in it and a lot of information in it. And so we realized, okay, if we actually think that this is seriously a very important problem, and we think the upside is really, really high here, then that's probably the only way we can do this. And so we went down this path. And then we had one other important constraint, is that, okay, like the one thing that biometrics always has is a concern around privacy. And then we learned that there's, back then, like this now sounds like a joke, but back then, zero knowledge proofs were still very early and very expensive. But within cryptography, there's a thing called zero knowledge proofs that allows you to essentially prove something to another party without actually revealing that information. And so then with these zero knowledge proofs that back then were very expensive still, we could kind of draw a system diagram of something that would be able to scale to a billion people or more, would be completely anonymous and privacy preserving, and we think AI safe. And kind of that then ended up being WorldCoin. So we essentially built a biometric device, it's called the Orb, which actually predates me. It was not my decision, but it's called the Orb, and it's Chrome, which at least, well, people care. It makes some people freak out, other people love it, but it is a biometric device that first has a lot of sensors in front to make sure that whatever it sees is an actual human being, so not a display. So it's relatively hard to attack. And it has a lot of neural networks on the device to check that you don't try to attack it. And then it takes a picture of the eye, calculates a unique embedding code out of it, and deletes the images. And that's the only thing that actually leaves the device. And then you as a person, you verify that you're a unique user with zero knowledge proofs, so you actually stay anonymous. And when you do that, you also receive ownership in the digital currency called WorldCoin. So that's how the whole thing comes together. And we spend a lot of time building this because we actually had to build our hardware device completely from the ground up, because like such a use case is just nothing that currently exists. And we were very paranoid about AI, which turned out to be a very good decision. And 4 years ago didn't sound like an obvious decision. And so, yeah, we spent $50 million and a couple of years in building these devices and the whole infrastructure around it. And we launched it in July and are now kind of sprinting to roll it out globally, which is a very different challenge and kind of what I learned recently.
We'll continue our interview in a moment after a word from our sponsors. If you don't already subscribe to Turpentine's industry-leading newsletters, like our new daily AI newsletter, Emergent Behavior, or Media Empires, you should. But that's not what I'm here to tell you about. The platform we use to power these newsletters is called Beehive, and it's excellent. First of all, it was started by the same early team who helped build Morning Brew into a $75 million newsletter business. And they built Beehive to offer that same powerful functionality to anyone sending emails. From essayists to business owners, the platform is beautiful, their text editor is intuitive, and they help you scale your audience with custom growth features. Beehive has powerful tools to help you monetize your content. You can easily launch paid subscriptions or pursue an advertising model. The Beehive platform will even connect you to premium brands to sponsor your newsletter. Not only do we use them, but thousands of the top newsletters in the world also use them, like Milk Road, Blockworks, the Lindy Newsletter, and so many more. Beehive's founder hooked up Upstream listeners with a sweet deal. Get 20% off for 3 months with code Upstream. Visit beehive.com, that's BEEHIIV.com, to get started. Hey all, Eric Thornburg here. I'm hearing more and more that founders want to get profitable and do more with less, especially with engineering. Listen, I love your 30-year-old ex-Fang senior software engineer as much as the next guy, but honestly, I can't afford them anymore. Founders everywhere are trying to turn to global talent, but boy, is it a hassle to do at scale, from sourcing to interviewing to on-the-ground operations and management. That's why I teamed up with Sean Lenihan, who's been building engineering teams in Vietnam at a very high level for over 5 years to help you access global engineering without the headache. Squad, Sean's new company, takes care of sourcing, legal compliance, and local HR for global talent so you don't have to. With teams across Asia and South America, we can cover you no matter which time zone you operate in. Their engineers follow your process and use your tools. They work with React, Next.js, or your favorite front-end frameworks. And on the back end, they're experts at Node, Python, Java, and anything under the sun. Full disclosure, it's going to cost more than the random person you found on Upwork that's doing 2 hours of work per week but billing you for 40.
but you'll get premium quality at a fraction of the typical cost. Our engineers are vetted top 1% talent and actually working hard for you every day. Increase your velocity without amping up burn. Head to ChooseSquad.com and mention Turpentine to skip the wait list.
What do you think people misunderstand or underappreciate or not get about WorldCoin?
Well, I think it really depends on kind of where in the curve you are. So I think the first thing is, okay, this is not a problem. So you could believe that. I think you will be proven wrong relatively soon if you're not already are. Second, kind of that's one. So meaning proof of personal, and we will need a human layer on the internet. The second one is certainly privacy. And I think that's like 99% of the critique that we face, and kind of what kind of the initial explanation I have to do is like, okay, it sounds like the exact opposite of what it actually is. It sounds like, okay, you build a biometric database of the world and like, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's like you kind of see control versus it's actually the exact opposite. It doesn't collect data. It's anonymous. It empowers people. It doesn't do the opposite of that. And so I think that's second. And then three is that I think that the fact that if we succeed, the mission is actually much bigger than even just the proof of personal. It should be the biggest financial network on the planet.
Why would it become the biggest financial network on the planet?
That's why we actually started it in the first place. Sam's initial idea was, what can we do to create this large network? And it would be around incentive alignment. So you spend billions of dollars to actually bootstrap a really large network. And then we realized we have to solve the proof of personal problem. So and what this actually means is you have, because we have proof of person, and because we have a digital currency that is valued at over $20 billion, we have a lot of capital to actually onboard a lot of people and kind of go deep in markets and actually scale a financial network. So proof of person is one piece, but also these people have a wallet and can interact value. So that's why.
Got it. So you were explaining some of the misunderstandings people have, and their variety of different misunderstandings.
Yep.
Yeah. WorldCoin is a controversial project. Some people love it. Some people have real problems with it. Why do you think people have problems with it, or why do you think it elicits such a negative reaction to some people?
Well, I think one thing is certainly what we already discussed. I think it's kind of the privacy concerns around biometrics. I think that certainly is the major one. I think another one is certainly that, just like me personally, I think I'm pretty good at technology and even running a company. I think I'm reasonably okay, but I'm really bad with marketing. And so I think that's also something we just need to get much better in. One interesting question, I actually want to hear your thoughts, is the decision to kind of build a Chrome orb, and kind of what do you think? Like, do you think this was like overall a good idea or a bad idea? And I kind of give you the quick context, but like one of the funniest and most kind of looking back, one of the more interesting comments that Sam had on WorldCoin in the beginning was, quote, "My biggest concern about WorldCoin is that no one cares." And funny enough, I think at least we took care of that, right? But certainly one thing I observe is that it's actually very culture dependent. So for example, if you go to Japan, people just love this aesthetics. They just like love this like Chrome orb, and it's weird and it's like interesting. But in the US, I think it's somewhat different. Or at least it's like, it's so sci-fi, it's so futuristic that I think kind of the people that are very tech forward and tech leaning, they kind of love it. But I think others are like then double freaked out because like the rest of the project is also so futuristic. So what do you think?
I think the Chrome the orb is awesome. I think that's not the reason, in my opinion, why people have challenges with WorldCoin. I think when something is potentially really scary, people need it to be humanized. I think people need to hear more from the founders. They need to hear more about the story. They need to hear or be reminded of why it's critical, why it's crucial, as opposed to some sort of, you know, either grab for money or grab for power or whatever. People assume the worst when they don't hear more about the story. And so that's why I love you're going on this podcast and investing a lot in comms marketing more generally going forward, because you do have such an inspiring story, both you as a founding team, but also your mission. And you just have to remind people.
I think that's true. I think in general, that's something we really want to change in the coming months, but I think we just have to get out there much more. It's like Sam and me as founders, just like talking about it. And the rest of the team as well. Like we have a lot of great engineers and people that can tell that story. So I think that is true.
How did you build this thing? Talk about what it's like to build this kind of organization. It requires so much expertise on so many different fronts. Talk a bit about that journey.
Yeah, it actually was a very surprising story in terms of what people expect, because so first of all, in terms of timing, we started the company 3 months before COVID. So I think we started working it in January. So I decided to leave Caltech in October or something. Then in January, we started working on it. And in March, COVID hit the world. And so we had like a 3 month period that like felt fairly romantic. We were sitting in an apartment in San Francisco. First time for me to be in San Francisco, really for kind of a meaningful amount of time. Rest of the founding team are like a lot of my friends from university, both from Caltech and from Max Planck in Germany. So a lot of theoretical physicists, which is the first funny piece of it. And so we started in San Francisco and had like these like three super fun months brainstorming with Max and Sam and just like trying a lot of things. And then in March, I was flying to Germany with some other members of the founding team to actually interview hardware companies that could help us to kind of build the whole hardware piece. And on the flight, like literally on the flight, Donald Trump announced that he's closing the borders for COVID. And so we saw it on the screen while we literally were walking in the plane, and I lost my visa. So I was on ESTA because I left Caltech. So I knew that this would be a one-way flight. And then talked to Sam and Max when we landed, and Sam was like, "Oh, this is just going to be a couple months. Don't worry about it." And of course, that was not true. But what that led to is we essentially had to rent an office in Germany, and we decided to do that in a fairly small town, outside of a small town. So, like, I think 500 people or something live in there. It's a city called Tennenlohe near Erlangen. And we rented like a pretty large office space there and apartments and houses around that. And then flew everyone we hired during the time in COVID, we just flew to this like little town in Germany. And so what it did is that essentially we were like working 7 days a week and living together in this like office in the middle of Germany, and like all these people from California and New York and Boston and whatever. So like it was like the first just funny situation. And so we worked really hard and very intense, which I think was really good. And I actually do think WorldCon would probably not have happened if that time was not the case, because there's like so much work and so small amount of people. Then I think the first moment that really shaped the company was it leaked. As like we were back then, these 15 people in this little town in Germany, and most of us, like, I mean, it was my first serious startup. I had a vertical farming company when I was in high school, but like the first like actual serious venture funded startup. And on Friday night, I got an email from a journalist from Bloomberg that they will publish that story on the cover page in an hour, and I have time to respond now. And like now, this sounds like a normal thing for me, but back then, for a kind of a small company and first time founders, was like a crazy thing. And of course, because Sam is a co-founder, that created this like massive, massive new situation. And so that was crazy. And that somewhat really shaped the company because we didn't realize, okay, this is very, very sensitive and we have to be very, very cautious in terms of whatever we do because the scrutiny will be very, very different than any other startup has. And so we became, for some amount of time, very secretive. And it's hard to describe. It was just like a crazy time. And then, of course, the other piece of it is just, I was like so much technology in one early stage company. It was like a complicated piece of hardware that we had to build from the ground up. And then all this protocol crypto stuff that was back then fairly new. And so, yeah, it was back then kind of five. It was the whole company was just engineering and research. And it was essentially five teams working across the stack. And then at some point, we switched to actually testing this and talking to users. And then yet again, kind of the company went through a transition phase where we had to build up, hire people from Airbnb and Uber and kind of really change the whole operating entity. And then we raised the Series B. I think the much more interesting piece about Rollcoin is just that it changed fundamentally, I think, three or four times, like from a research organization to a pro organization to a scaling organization. And that might be normal for a company, but it was definitely an interesting experience for me to go through.
Talk about what it's like to work with foreign governments or what advice would you give other founders who building something in this way that requires coordination, because what you're doing is both deeply technically complex, but also politically or regulatorily complex as well, potentially. So talk a little bit about what that's been like and what advice you might give to other founders.
That is actually a very good question. Yeah, yet again, I think this is something where Rollcoin was very unusual, because usually when you're a startup and you enter a country, you have quite some time until kind of the leaders of a government are actually aware or become aware of you, right? But again, because of Sam and because of kind of all the PR, whenever we entered or enter a country, we essentially have to immediately talk to the leadership of a government. And so that was something that I think took us some months to learn. And we had a lot of like really crazy situations. Like I was, for example, testifying in front of Kenyan Parliament, which was a very unique experience. Like, it was just crazy. So it's like a lot of these things, just like situations that it's really hard to get across how crazy they have been. And in our case, there's like 15 countries we discuss on a weekly basis. So there's like a lot of these situations. And I think that the one general takeaway that I have is cultures and countries are so, like, especially if you go completely out of your zone, like if you, like, whatever, Europe, I think, is somewhat easy to understand as an American and vice versa. But if you go to Asia and you go to Africa, and like these cultures are so wildly different that like you can't just not rely on your intuition at all. You really have to find someone locally on the ground that you can trust and really question all your assumptions. Just like start from the beginning and explain, this is what we're doing. What do you think could go wrong? Who should we talk to? And kind of some of these Asian countries just behave very different. They're worried about very different things, care about very different things. So I think that's question all your assumptions, I think is the summary that I have.
Yeah, that's good advice. How do you make sure WorldCoin isn't used for negative ends? And that it's, how do you protect against any possible negative use cases?
Well, build a system that can just fundamentally not do that. It's like, I think you don't want to rely even on your own, kind of, like, I don't want to even need to trust myself, essentially, because I might lose my job for whatever reason, or like something else might go wrong. So I think we build everything from the ground up in a way that is fully kind of decouples all kind of potential biometric data from profiles, keeps you anonymous while you use it, doesn't store data, and now we really have to decentralize everything even much further. So like our servers are not a blocker for anything. So yeah, I think that the short answer is just build something that cannot be used for anything bad.
Alex, I understand Vitalik was influential in you decentralizing WorldCoin. Talk a bit about that.
I mean, Vitalik was influential in many ways, I think. But one perspective that Vitalik added to my overall thinking is just he always immediately goes to the extreme case, right? I think like just living through Ethereum and kind of this becoming this like extremely influential $200 billion thing, right? Like Vitalik immediately jumps to, okay, like what happens if government attacks you? What happens if like this protocol becomes fundamental infrastructure for society? What are all the things that can go wrong? And that just amped up, I think, all of our urgency drastically. To kind of decentralize everything, et cetera, et cetera. So it's just similar to when as a founder, you talk to a founder, it's like a couple stages ahead. I think Vitalik is the same thing for kind of a protocol. And so yeah, it was like a lens into the future almost. And that got us to put like, I don't know, 60, 70% of our engineering resources around decentralization. So it's pretty serious. So yeah, it's a very smart guy.
Yeah, absolutely. The speaking of very smart people, talk more about your partnership with Sam. What are some of the biggest lessons you've taken from him? Maybe something non-obvious.
Yeah, actually, the funniest takeaway actually from working with Sam is actually that there is not much in obvious. It's like I think the power of Sam is like incredible simplicity. Like we always joke at the company that Sam never says anything surprising, or very rarely, but always gives a very simple answer, but with a lot of conviction. So I think it's that combination of simplicity, but incredible conviction that other people just usually would not have, and just follow the conviction over a year time frame. So it's actually that was my inspiring takeaway, that there's no magical skills that you kind of fundamentally have to learn, but rather just need to be smart, work really hard, think first principled, and walk through it, don't give up, essentially. And yeah, he's just, well, and the other thing is the level of ambition. It's just, Sam mentally always goes to the absolute extreme, right? It's like, how can this be the biggest financial network on the planet? Like that's a very normal question to ask. And that's as a first time founder, nothing you would usually do, or something that just takes you a lot of time to build up.
Talk about what scares and excites you about a world after AGI. Like, let's get into the future a little bit.
Well, I mean, let's start with the exciting piece. I think the exciting piece is that very obviously it might solve pretty much every problem that we think of, right? It will accelerate science drastically. It will accelerate engineering, kind of overall productivity drastically. So like on the one hand, it will very likely be the best thing we ever invented. On the other hand, the existential risk of it actually worries me quite a bit. And yeah, it's just really hard to calm me down around that, I think. It just like feels like a really, like I understand all the arguments, and I mean, fundamentally I'm an engineer, so like I understand all of this thinking, but like, abstractly aligning something that is much more intelligent than you are is just a really, really hard problem. Like if it actually gets to that. So kind of my dream state would be a system without any internal goals or ambitions or feelings that is just incredibly intelligent and can solve whatever problem you throw at it, like something like a hyper intelligent calculator. Kind of that would be the dream. And so the question is, will we get there, or will these systems build out kind of internal consciousness goals that might not align with ours? So that's nothing new, but I think, yeah, I have no like incredibly new thoughts to add here. I think this is like probably resonates very much with what you think, is my guess, because I think we all somewhat think the same around this topic. What do you think?
I mean, I think there, it really depends on what time scale. There's on a shorter time scale, there's just the human labor meaning question. If humans get automated, what are how do we find our sense of purpose in the world? How do humans intersect with AI? But they're much more concerning things, like humans using AI as weapons, or even more sci-fi scenarios that could go wrong. So I think it really depends on the time scale and the degree and what team you're on. If you're on team human as opposed to team evolution or something, then indifferent of kind of what is the what is the winner, who are the winners and losers, etc. So lots of interesting philosophical conundrums that we'll have to face in the future.
Yeah, look, I immediately went to kind of the extreme AI situation. Yeah. Let me actually start maybe a little earlier than that. I think you're right.
Sure.
So I think the first, talking about timescales, my guess is actually that it's whatever. I don't think it's more than 10 years away that you at least will get to AGI. Would not surprise me if it's by 2030, or even a little earlier than that. That being said, I don't think AGI, like AGI itself, will already transform everything. In fact, it might be almost surprising in terms of how non-transformational that step is, because I think until then, the next 5 years, we'll just like build more and more capable systems over time, and we'll just build better products, and like startups will slowly adopt and things like that. So I think all of this will be very manageable, and honestly very exciting. I think, yeah, the question is like at some point, which you mentioned as a kind of a sci-fi situation, and that is true, but like, will there be kind of a self-improvement cycle at some point that leads to self-improvement and just like exponential takeoff, right? That's where I think things will get very unpredictable. But until then, I think the internet will be a very interesting place. I'm talking about proof of personhood, I think, in a world in which whatever, like a large percentage of all content on the internet will be AI generated, which I think will be the case relatively soon. I think the internet will foundationally really change. Not necessarily in a bad way, but it will. I think, yeah, work is going to be certainly the most meaningful. All right. It's like the whole economy will transform, and it will be good for some, bad for others. Crazy time.
Speaking of, if you weren't working on WorldCoin and you had to be working on some other technology that you think would be game changing, starting a company and something that you think would be very important, what other things would you consider or work on?
Four things. It would be either fusion, synthetic biology and genetics, because I think that's kind of AI will actually transform that field drastically, and kind of getting genetic engineering from a science to engineering discipline, I think it's going to be incredible. So it's going to solve so many diseases and things like that. Third would be BCIs. But it's like, I actually do think Neuralink is quite far ahead, so I'm not sure I would start a company there, but I think that's going to be one very exciting and very important at the same time. These would be the top three. So genetic, synthetic, blah, blah, biology, BCIs, fusion.
You mentioned four ideas.
Well, the last one would be way less important, I think, but probably very profitable, is like if you're able to raise that capital, it would be chip manufacturing and things like that. So I think everything around AI infrastructure, right? It's like if you start very from the bottom, energy, and you go to the chips, then you go to the data centers and the actual clusters. I think whatever you capture along that stack, if you're a very capable founder and you have a lot of capital, that's probably a good place to build a big business.
Yeah. And say more about BCIs. Like, what do you expect? Where are we right now? I haven't been following. Where are we right now? Are we close to something that's interesting? You know, and where is it all going? What will it mean?
I actually started reading much more about this the last 2 weeks. I'm still far from an expert, but I asked myself the same question 2 weeks ago. My interesting takeaway is that I think there is no kind of foundational things missing. There's no like sometimes in engineering, you have like these like really, really big questions and you just have no idea what the answer will be and just like work towards them. I think fusion has been one of them a couple of years ago. I think in BCIs, that's actually not the case. I think we understand everything reasonably well. And I think there's like a path for everything. And it really comes down to pure engineering and material science. It's just like if you go to Neuralink specifically, it's just how do you make these electrodes even smaller? How do you make the robot even more accurate and are able to put much more electrodes into the brain? And then how do you build the whole system to actually read out these signals? And I mean, there's different ways. Neuralink is kind of the most direct way, right? So you can literally put electrodes in the brain. There is other ones that are like you essentially put a PCB on the brain and you try to stimulate it, but readout is much harder with that. And then you can also try to do it non-invasive, but I think input is just really hard. Output is somewhat possible. You can read out the brain, but it's really hard to put information in it. So, but yeah, I think Neuralink is actually kind of the coolest approach. And then there's other companies that do somewhat similar to that. But it was very surprising to me to learn that it really is all about engineering. That's a pretty crazy statement if you think about it, because that makes it pretty likely that in 5 years we will actually have these things, or like five to 10 years. Like it's hard to say how long, but you can at least say that okay, very definitely we will have these things. So that was my takeaway.
Yeah, fascinating. Let's in closing, what plugs do you have for WorldCoin? What do you want listeners to know about it or potentially do if they're curious, learning more or get involved?
Oh, that's a good question. I think follow me and Sam on Twitter. And in the coming months, just everything will scale up. So I think that's fundamentally what you have to expect. Many more countries will launch, many more devices will go live. We're still in kind of in the very, very early phases of that. So yeah, just follow us and see what happens. And hopefully it's gonna be a great year for us.
Cool. Let's wrap on that. Alex, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. It's been a great episode.
Thanks for having me.
Upstream with Eric Thornburg is a show from Turpentine, the podcast network behind Moment of Zen and Cognitive Revolution. If you like the episode, please leave a review in the Apple Store. Hey everyone, Eric here. At Turpentine, we're building the first media outlet for tech people by tech people. We're the network behind the show you're listening to right now. We have a slate of hit shows across a range of topics and industries, from our AI and investing cluster of podcasts, to shows that drive the conversation in tech with the most interesting thinkers, founders, investors, and influencers, like Econ 102 with Noah Smith. We're launching new shows every week, and we're looking for industry-leading sponsors. If you think that might be you and your company, email me at erikaturpentine.co. That's E-R-I-K at turpentine.co, and let's partner together.